smelled like. And and I thought, wow, that was like a very good example of being here now. Like,
well, and when you're playing music or when we were dancing, you're in the flow of the moment. You're not thinking about
right
anything else.
You're not ahead or behind or anywhere else. You're right there. So, but I'm still alone. You turn into investigator.
Hi, I am Ezra. Welcome to the Curio Podcast. In this episode, the ladies will talk about driving and meditation.
Ziggy? Do you want to speak? Speak!
That's a good boy!
Ziggy had an okay 4th of July. He was a little freaked out. He had his thunder shirt on. He'd had some Xanax.
Oh, you did give him some Xanax.
And I held him tight in a fort of pillows.
Aww.
And every time our neighbors on the corner were lighting off those big mortars, and every time...
Oh, God.
Yeah, he would just...
Poor little guy.
Yeah, but he was all right.
Soji got some doggy downers, too. She just passed out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He did not pass out.
Yeah. She just shakes uncontrollably. She gets really nervous.
Yeah.
Really freaked out, and I just can't watch her like that. The jacket doesn't help, or the thunder shirt, the thunder wrap.
So here we are. Bee's back from vacation. How was your trip?
It was lovely. We were up in the Bay Area. There are fires up there right now.
I heard.
So the air quality was really bad. And I always look forward to the bright blue skies and clean bay breezes, but not this time. The sky was white, and it was schmucky and
good
yucky.
Word.
When we got down to Mountain View, though, it was really nice, and we had a good show. It was a long day. A lot of people on the 5.
Ugh.
I'd like to make a public service announcement about highway driving.
Please do.
The left lane is the passing lane. It is not the lollygagging hangout next to the big rig.
Nope.
Lane. It is not the constipation lane. It is not the place where you park your car's speedometer at 72 miles an hour and listen to your books on tape.
Or your favorite podcast.
Your favorite podcast. Yeah, it's so hard for me. I'm a very aggressive driver, and I say lots and lots of bad words, and it bothers my family immensely. Yeah. And my husband, who has an enormous capacity for patience when it comes to this, was reminding me very gently to be the person...
all know you are.
Be who... Who you want to see others, you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
Be the change you want to see in the world. Hi, Quinn.
Be the change you want to see on the highway. Exactly. And it was really hard. And I get aggressive and invested. And there was this one Dodge that, like, probably for 200 miles, I just could not get away from him. And it was one of those moments, like, you're trying to get around the guy.
Right.
And you go to get around him, and he speeds up.
Oh, yeah.
And then blocks you in. And this... Mm. Makes me crazy. And we finally lost him somewhere near Castaic Lake.
That's a long time.
It was a long time. It was a long time. Yeah. And he was doing it to other people, not just me. It's like...
So he was making a game of the long drive then.
I don't even think he was paying attention. I think it was more of a subconscious thing, because every time we got near him, he was just... And He was driving with one hand and stroking his beard with the other, kind of staring off into space. And I thought, he is unaware of anybody else on this highway.
You just made him sound like some sort of evil race car driver.
He was just some white guy with a big beard and...
A Dodge Charger.
He wasn't a Dodge Charger.
You said that earlier.
Did I? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
I had driven across Texas with my parents on, like, cross-country road trips before, but mm-hmm. I had never driven myself there. Yeah. And when we took a cross-country trip, Texas, by the way, most of it, and my peeps are from there.
Mine too.
No disrespect. Mine
too. Yeah.
Is a barren wasteland. It's like a
West
dystopian
Texas.
Horror movie or
West
something.
West Texas for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the speed limit is like a very agreeable, 75, 80? No, 80? It's something crazy on the highway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to follow the regular lane, passing lane scenario because your life depends on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was such an education for me. I never realized that that was a passing lane growing up in California. I did not know that until I drove through Texas.
Right.
So even though I hate it, I hate West Texas, I think it should just grow some trees or something. I think everyone should have to drive there at least once in their life on the highway around big rigs, and you would learn something.
Well, and there's also, there's the slow trucks.
Yeah.
The big slow trucks with the gun racks in the back.
And, right.
You know,
that's a thing.
It's
there.
Now in Utah.
I've never been to Utah.
Oh my gosh. I love Utah. It's beautiful. It's clean. Everybody's friendly. It's like, it's almost surreal, Utah. And the signs, there are signs on the highway, like I'd say every, 5-10 miles about ish mm-hmm. that say, slower traffic, stay right, left lane's a passing lane. I'm paraphrasing, obviously,
right.
because it's a sign. It's not going to have all those words. And then it says, it's the law.
And, jackasses.
And,
no, they wouldn't say that there.
No. No, they wouldn't. Anyway, so, and people obey that guideline.
Right.
It's not negotiable. You see people, they pass, they get right back over in the
right
lane.
Well, that's how it is. I feel like that's how it is everywhere else I've ever driven.
Except for California. It's interesting how there are different driving styles throughout the United States. And
right.
anybody who's been any, multiple places in the United States, I think would agree with that.
Right.
There's just a lot of... I've never driven in New York.
Nor have I.
I don't...
That would scare me.
That would scare me, too.
Driving in Italy would scare me.
Oh, what's that like?
Well, I mean, the places that I've been are, old living museums with tiny little cobblestone streets. In the middle of Florence, there's only certain cars that are left. You're hearing Ziggy panting because he's really excited to be here. Huh, Ziggy? Anyway, like the first time I went to Florence, I got off the train, I was headed to a cafe and it was raining and I almost got hit by a bus. Like that was my first experience.
Oh no.
But it seems, I'm sure you would get used to it, but to me it seems really difficult. Like I would just rather walk.
Mm-hmm. Are the cars smaller? The
streets
are probably more narrow.
And the cars are really, really small. That was something that actually my friend Kelly and I were taking pictures of, all the tiny cars. The cars are so tiny, but in both directions. So, like, you can parallel park by just pulling your car in the front. I'm making a hand motion that you guys can't see, but Kim can see it. Instead of parallel parking, you just would turn into the spot.
Instead of backing in.
Right, exactly.
And the hand motion is going backwards. You just zip right in.
But I would live in Italy and walk everywhere. I don't need to ever drive again. That's what I would do.
Older cities are designed to be walkable.
Right.
You know?
I really got that feeling in Dublin, like, the first time I was there. I was like, I would live here. this is the place. Mm-hmm. I would have a tiny little apartment over some kind of cafe, and I would just walk everywhere and be cold. And I don't care, because I'd rather be cold than hot.
Really?
I hate being hot.
Huh.
That was somebody's fault.
I fluctuate with that, but yeah, I don't like being cold.
I don't mind being cold, and you can always put blankets and stuff on. Being cold's never bothered me. Being hot, like, almost causes me anxiety. It's almost like my claustrophobia gets tricked.
Because the hot is touching you everywhere?
I'm not touching you. No, it's almost like I can't get away from it, and I can't breathe or something. Yeah, no, it's my own neurosis. I understand that, but...
Well, it's different hot here.
Oh, yeah, the hot in, like, New Orleans or Tennessee or, you know, it's like...
super humid hot. It's different, yeah.
You feel like you're swimming through the air. So do you have any plans to go anywhere else this summer? Was that your guys' big trip for the summer?
I'm going to... next week, I'm going to... I'm driving to Denver.
Oh, that's right. I knew that.
Yeah, so I'm going to take the low road out there and stop in Albuquerque.
Oh, I love Albuquerque!
Catch a Dead and Company show there. And then drive up to Denver, go to Boulder, catch a couple shows there. And then I haven't decided how I'm going to come home yet.
Huh.
Yeah.
I would say go see the Grand Canyon, but it'll be like 140 degrees there right now.
No, I like the Grand Canyon in the spring.
I've actually never been to the Grand Canyon.
You haven't?
No. And it's something I tell everyone.
Let's go.
Okay.
Next spring.
Okay.
Go in the spring. It's beautiful.
Okay.
I'm
going to hold you to this.
All right. No.
Now it's on recorded digital files forever.
I'll start planning the trip right now.
Okay.
I would love it. They've got little cabins that you can stay in.
I know. I looked at all of this going, nobody ever wants to go with me.
It's amazing. When I was a kid, we went on road trips all the time, and we would swing by the Grand Canyon. And it was always kind of like, as a kid, it's like, oh, yeah, it's a big hologram.
Whatever,
blah, blah, blah. Indians, rocks, blah. And then as
just
an
like
adult.
That?
Yeah, pretty much.
Blah, blah.
As an adult, I went with our family. The kids were younger. It was just amazing. It was such a different experience. Because, you know, like, this river has carved through this rock for thousands of years. And I was looking down. I was like, man, all those rocks down there are so old. And
that's my scientific I can't even think of the word. My period started like 5 days early because I'm going through reverse menopause.
Oh.
Not reverse menopause. Reverse puberty. That's what I've been calling it.
Okay.
And so my brain's all scrambled.
Oh.
That's my scientific... What's the word I'm looking
Analysis?
For?
Analysis?
Yes!
Okay.
I was thinking experiment. Oh my God,
together,
I swear I know how to speak English.
So you and I together with our perimenopausal reverse puberty brains maybe make one half adult brain.
I was going together. To expound on your idea of enjoying things when you're older. Crossing the Mississippi River with my parents in my mom's Pinto station wagon. My sister and I were in the back, and we were playing. We had portable Space Invaders and portable Pac-Man. They looked like
the
arcade
really?
Version, but they were tiny.
Aww.
And we were obsessed with video games. It was like 1982 or something, 83.
You were brand new on the scene.
Right. And we're driving cross country. We're going to Tennessee, where my grandparents live, to go visit them, where we later moved for a couple of years. But so we're crossing over the Mississippi River, and my dad says, "Put your games down." And I put my game down, and my dad tells my sister, like, "Put your game down. It's the Mississippi River," and he's trying to tell her, like, "This is a once in a lifetime experience."
This is a big deal. Like,
and she was so mad that he told her to turn her video game off. That she turned it off and shut her eyes over the whole river. And so, when I went back as an adult, I was taking pictures. It was lovely. It's like, it's so majestic. You can't even imagine it. Like, it's, and I didn't remember it that way.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, it was just, we were on a bridge driving over it, blah, blah, blah. But my family, we went and stayed by it, and we went down to it, and, you know, like, really enjoyed it. And I posted a picture on Facebook, and my sister was like, I wish I could go there. And my dad chimed in with a, well, actually.
Let me tell you a story, sweetheart.
And it's funny, like, when you grow up and you realize, like, the things that your parents did that maybe pissed you off when you were young, like, they were, most of the time, they were doing them for good reasons. Like, he told her to turn her video game off, and she hated that, but he was trying to show her something wonderful and majestic about our world, you know?
Yeah.
I thought it was hysterical. I hope someday she gets back and she can...
She can see it.
She can see the actual Mississippi River. So when I was in Minneapolis a couple weeks ago, the Mississippi runs through Minneapolis too, but it's so different.
It's
amazing how different it is.
It's a different temperature, I would imagine. And
it's smaller. It's cleaner looking. Like, you know, when you get down south in Memphis, New Orleans and stuff, it looks like just brown water. It looks like mud. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where that term comes from, muddy waters. You hear it in blues songs and stuff. But up in Minneapolis, it just looked like a regular... I mean, it was big, but not amazingly big.
Right.
But down at the bottom, it becomes like you can barely see across it. It's so huge. But, okay, that's my story about the Mississippi River. I love it.
That's cool.
Someday, it's one of my dreams to take one of the river boats.
Oh, that would be fun.
It's like one of my dreams. Someday if I ever win the lottery, I'm going to take a riverboat cruise down the Mississippi. It's like a super dream of mine. And I'll read Mark Twain novels.
Oh.
And I'll listen to bluegrass or whatever the fuck I want to listen to.
And just immerse yourself in the culture. Oh my gosh. Ziggy, you scared me.
Ziggy is head of security around here.
That makes me think of how our environment shapes our culture.
Even it's big when you're around the Mississippi. It's like, at least for me, it's almost like you can feel it. It's like a pulse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we went to there was a museum there in Memphis, and just the artifacts that they've found around there, the handmade instruments.
Oh, wow.
The people that worked down at the river would make to pass the time when they were waiting for things. You know, just everything about it, the culture, the barbecue, the people, it's just, it's all fed by that river. And that river. Ziggy senses danger.
Should I let him out?
No. Come here. Come here, buddy.
I think the United States is, well, any country is going to have its gems, you know, the pieces of environment that are going to really shape the local culture.
Right.
But America's, there's so much diversity. You know, you've
got it's so huge.
The Mississippi River, you've got...
The Rocky Mountains.
The Rocky Mountains, you've got the Everglades and the swamps of Louisiana. You've got the beaches of California. San Francisco Bay. I mean, that's an interesting piece of culture, too. It's just all the people who came through there.
Yeah.
All the ships and the earthquake and the landfills. You know, there's so much landfill around there. And it'll be like, oh, yeah, this is built on landfill from the 06 earthquake? 06, 08.
06?
I think.
I don't remember. It was in the O's.
Anyway, so they filled in parts of this. Like Alameda is landfill.
Landfill, right.
The Albany Bulb, which is a really fascinating place, is landfill. And that, when we were there, there was a dog park there. It was really interesting. So it's this chunk of landfill that juts out into the bay, and it looks like a bulb on the end of a stick. So you walk out, and there's this big chunk of land, and there's trees and plants and everything. And at the time, there was a very well-organized, healthy homeless population there. Mm-hmm. People lived there.
Right.
There was a library.
I remember you talking about this.
It was a fascinating place, and there were homes set up. I mean, we walked through, we got lost, and we found some lady hanging out in her space, and we asked her, you know, how do we get to the, you know, the sculptures? Because there's all these beautiful art sculptures, mm-hmm. like, right on the edge of the water. And she told us, she was friendly and nice. And like I said, there's a library there.
That's so cool.
So they have this whole community on the edge of the bay, and that's where they lived. When we left, they were in the process of cleaning it up and making people leave, and it was ridiculous to me. They weren't hurting anybody. They weren't starting fires. There was no...
Was this before the Super Bowl?
I don't know.
My brother is homeless in San Francisco. And he got arrested right before the Super Bowl happened there for some charge. He was on a bike, and they arrested him for not being able to prove that he had purchased the bike.
What?
But they were arresting a lot of people, a lot of homeless people at that point, trying to get people cleared out before the Super Bowl came.
I believe the Super Bowl happened south of the bulb of Albany in but there was a big crackdown on homeless folks, and it's a ongoing issue in any urban area. I think it's becoming more and more, though.
Yeah.
But what was happening up there was gentrification. So the Mission District, which was a really gritty, interesting, artsy place to be, and also affordable in the city, started to become gentrified. So people were coming in, plunking down their money, buying up these buildings, these shops, and making them fancy. And so people were getting priced out of their homes.
That's happening everywhere, especially in California, but everywhere.
But I think it's really interesting to think about how the environment affects the society and the people who live there. And
well, that's an interesting point about San Francisco specifically with the earthquakes, because that's the same deal in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. Mexico City is a swamp, basically, that was filled in. Yeah, and they have terrible earthquakes there.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Oh, and I watched a thing about Paris once. They have one of the most sophisticated systems of... sorry, my phone was buzzing.
Scared me.
They have one of the most sophisticated systems of basically pulling water out of their ground, because they're basically built on a swamp.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's just crazy. What humans are capable of, what we do to live in one particular place.
Right, and why? Why would you want to build a big city on a swamp? What was the inspiration? What was the need? Or,
well, I know in Venice, Italy, it was for protection.
Oh.
The island of Venice was basically just swampland. It wasn't capable of holding buildings. So every building that's there, all the streets and everything that's there, is built on these giant pylons pounded down into the soft earth. And that place wouldn't have existed if people weren't trying to get away from invading armies and shit.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy human beings.
So we came today without really a plan, because we've had so many weeks in a row of horrible bad things happening that we felt like we had to address, that we haven't really been able to. We thought maybe a good palate cleansing episode was in order,
right?
But things are still shitty out in the world, but we don't feel like talking about them today.
We can talk about positive things. There's so many positive things happening.
Well, Scott Pruitt resigned today.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I saw that.
So that's positive.
I thought, well, thank, finally, dude. I mean, get the hint.
I mean, I don't have much hope that they'll put somebody in that's much better than him, but every little victory helps. Yeah,
there's some good stuff going on out there, and it seems like, you know, the light shines brightest in the dark.
Yes.
Too. So there's a lot of bright lights out there. We have a friend, Sarah Basaki, who's posting some really, really inspirational stuff on Facebook. And she's one of those people that just kind of puts out this wonderful vibe.
Yeah, she radiates.
You know, she does. You just always feel comfortable with her and relaxed and accepted, and she's just, she's an amazing person. So I'm glad to hear her voice and see her beautiful face. And there's a lot of other good stuff going on out there, you know.
I was really excited to see the woman who scaled the Statue of Liberty on the 4th of July. Did you hear about that?
I saw a picture that you posted, but I don't know anything about it. Tell me about it. What happened?
She scaled the Statue of Liberty. There was another group there.
On the outside?
On the outside.
That makes my butt pucker.
I know. The first few photos I saw, I was like, oh, she's at the foot. She was like, you could see her. She's sitting behind the foot that's kind of raised up, like it's taking a step. And I was like, oh, whatever. And then I saw a picture that was taken from far away. The pedestal that the statue is on is gigantic. Mm-hmm. She scaled that.
Huge. How did she do it?
I don't know exactly.
Is she like a...
I don't know.
Rock climber? Or?
But she got up there and she sat down and she said, I'm not leaving until you let all the children go that you have. Isn't that sweet? But then that, her action, like I was taking a shower this morning thinking about her and how people don't know how much power they have.
No, they don't.
That little act, it brought so much, it brought joy to me. I'm sure it brought joy to a lot of people. And also that feeling, you know, like when you're young and you first hear about the like revolutionaries, you know, gaining our freedom in the U.S. or whatever, and you start to feel that stirring in your soul of like, oh, the people can fight back. We can stand up for ourselves.
Yeah,
that woman stirred that in me today.
Yeah.
So that felt good, and I'm proud of her. And you know, she's been arrested, and who knows what's going to happen. She has a lawyer, but I want to thank her because she gave me a little bit of hope today.
She said, look what I can do.
Look what I can do. You can do something, too.
And I think we can all do those. I mean, obviously, not all of us are going to do something that huge, but we can do little things every single day.
Like what?
Like what?
Like what?
Like being nice to each other, like opening doors for each other, or having a kind word or a compliment. You know, it's not that hard. It's really, really not that hard.
Well, it takes being in the moment.
It takes being in the moment and being aware of your surroundings and the people around you.
Right.
And knowing that they're knocking down the dividing line. You know, this is another human being. It's not, you're not at odds with everybody that you're around. You know what I mean? We should feel a sense of community everywhere we go.
We should.
I went to Marshall's today and...
They still have Marshalls?
I have gotten in the habit of talking to clerks and like anybody I come in contact with. And the woman today, I was there with my daughter and she was buying some clothes that I'm okay with. Anyway.
I promise. I swear.
And so this woman, she's like, oh, look at these jeans. These are so cute and they don't have any holes in them. And I said, yeah, it's, you know, that's kind of the thing right now. That's the fashion, is holes and everything. And she said, I just can't wrap my head around it. I just can't do that. And I said, well, it's not necessarily for our age group. And it was like we made an instant connection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so she went on and talked about these jeans that she got at Nordstrom. And we had this long conversation. And it was really nice. You know what I mean? Just to have this nice conversation with this woman. I don't know what her name is. I don't know anything about her. And when we left, I said, you know, have a great day. And she said, thanks, you too. And I believed her.
Yeah.
She wanted me to have a great day. And I wanted her to have a great day too. And it sounds stupid because you say that, oh, have a great day. Have a nice day.
Right.
But it was sincere. And we got outside. And my daughter says, God, Mom, you talk to everybody. And I said, yeah, that's right. Last time we were here, I talked to the woman about her bra. And she said, yeah, I was there. Like, God, you know, so embarrassing. And I did. I had this wonderful conversation with this woman who was very well endowed. And she was talking to me about this bra. She bought it at Victoria's Secret and they wouldn't return it. And it gave her a bruise and she had to take
pictures.
Holy shit. And it was like, we were talking for a while.
Right.
There were probably people in line that were a little pissed off. But
we made that connection, and it wasn't hard. Yeah. It wasn't hard to, you know, have a nice conversation with somebody.
Yeah, it's not hard.
And they say that smiles are contagious, and if you walk around and smile at people, I've tried this, by the way, and it is absolutely true. You walk around smiling at everybody, they will smile back.
Well, yeah, because then they're like, ooh, what's wrong with her? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Oh, I'm smiling, so it won't hurt me.
You know what I love to do is when I'm on walks, I mean, especially here in L.A., people don't talk to each other, even if you pass each other on the street. Everybody looks down and you keep walking. But I make a point to go, hi, or good evening. And somebody told me once that saying hello to people you don't know is a form of civil disobedience.
Really? How?
The only way I can imagine is like, connection that's forged between two people who, we don't need a connection. We're running, we're cogs in the.
We're breaking some rules.
Yeah.
Well, we're taught from a young age, don't talk to strangers.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, God, that one directive given to a young child.
Don't talk to strangers.
How do you carry that into the future? Right. Don't talk to strangers. Because they're scary? Because they might hurt you?
Because they'll hurt you, yeah.
So, as, you know, our young minds are like little pieces of Play-Doh, clay. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff gets stuck in there. And so how does our adult mind interpret that old story?
I mean, I feel like I've definitely had to unlearn that. Mm-hmm. And it's been from interactions like we were just talking about, like talking to somebody on the street or talking to somebody in the grocery store. Being able to talk to people I don't know didn't come naturally to me. It was something that I had to learn. And now as an adult, I feel like I'm really good at it. I talk to people all the time.
You did last weekend. It was really great. Or weekend before last. Oh my gosh.
What are you talking? Oh.
Interviewing. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry. I rabbit holed you.
I was just going to say it was something that I had to, it was like layers I had to peel back. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's intertwined with not having self-confidence or not thinking that I deserve people's time, things like that. But I've gotten better and better at it. Right now, it feels to me like it's hard for me.
To talk to?
Well, I tend to get frazzled. And so I've been meditating every day. I've been practicing mindfulness, all that. So I'm trying to stay in the moment. And I don't know if I just recognized it because of that, because of my practice, and it's something that I used to do all the time, or if I'm just more frazzled right now because I'm so worried about everything that's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. But I went to the grocery store the other day, and the woman doing the register said, hi, how are you today? And I just said, fine. And I kept doing my, like, putting my chip in or
doing
whatever.
Your thing.
And I looked up instantly and I said, I'm so sorry. I'm okay. How are you?
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm great. And, you know, then we had a conversation and I felt terrible. But I'm wondering now, how many times have I done that before?
Right.
Because I was, like, thinking about worst case scenarios and the world's going to blow up and all the other things my rattled, addled mind thinks of.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's just I'm preoccupied because the world feels terrible, or if I'm just now noticing when I wasn't being aware. And it's coming faster, me realizing, like, oh, I'm not aware right now. I have another interesting story. I had gotten really upset a couple weeks ago about the kids being detained, separated from their families, and being put into cages and things like that. And I was brushing my teeth and sat down on the edge of my bathtub and burst into tears. Mm. Now, my old self would have wallowed in that, and nothing's going to change, and my mind would have gone to the worst case scenario, right? But because of my daily meditation practice, very quickly, on its own, my brain did something spectacular, and it kind of let that go slowly, not abruptly, not with anger, nothing. It kind of let that feeling go, and the thing that popped into my head was, okay, what are you going to do about it? And it was almost instantaneous. Like, from the moment where I burst into tears and stopped crying and thought to myself, what am I going to do about it, was less than a minute. And I didn't realize it at first. I went about my day and started writing my protest postcards and all the shit that I do. And later on, I went, hey, my mind is, like, getting healthy and shit.
You knew, and I think that's the thing, is that we know what we need to
feel always
better.
Do, yeah.
Yeah.
But in the moment, it's hard, especially when you're feeling very emotional. Yeah. It's hard to think about the things that you already know you should be doing.
Right, and kind of get past the emotion and right. say, okay, this is affecting me. What can I do? How can I solve this problem, make myself feel better,
right.
affect the, you know, make the effect that I want to make.
Right.
Or that I need to. Because sometimes it's a need.
Sometimes it's a need, yeah.
It's not just, and I think with things that hit us in such a deep sense, in a deep emotional way, it is a need.
Yeah.
You know, we heard a story about, over the weekend, a man was telling us, a friend, he lived in Scotland, and he lived next door to a man who beat his wife. And he heard her screaming, oh God, please stop, help me, help me. And he got a friend and knocked on the door, and eventually it stopped. And he couldn't not do anything.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it did stop, and then... Yeah, it was a very difficult story to hear, and one a difficult one to tell. And I think I'm going off into a rabbit hole that may not make any sense. So I'm going to stop. But anyway, I think that's it. Is that, you know, there are times like you see a child who is distraught. You know, I've been in places where there is a young child crying
right.
because they are lost and yeah. they cannot find their grown up or right. whatever. And I have said, my name's Kimmy. I'm a teacher. At the time I was a teacher. Let's find your, you know, who are your people? Who's right. your parent? Who are you here with? Let's find a clerk. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like trying to help them out. I can't walk by that.
No,
I can't do that. I can't walk by a baby bird that's stuck on the ground trying to learn how to fly. You know what I mean? I'm like, get in the bushes. Come on. There are cats around here.
I'm that way with bees even and little ants.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I cannot watch something suffer and do nothing.
Right.
And right now there's a lot of suffering that we're witness to.
Yeah.
So it's like that woman said at the rally. You know, it feels good to do something. Mm-hmm. It feels good to talk to people. It feels good to, you know, try to affect things
right.
in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of it from a Buddhist perspective, again, this is a little bit of a rabbit hole, the Dalai Lama says, I'm not compassionate for other people. I'm compassionate for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think... sometimes it's a really difficult concept to wrap yes. one's head around, but it's an environment. It's a ecosystem. That yeah. kind of compassion is like, it becomes perpetual then.
Right.
So
I think for me right now, the category I'm working on is generosity of thought.
Ooh.
Because
that's hard.
Like you with the driving. I still have those feelings, but instead of telling the person or screaming, you know, asshole, what the fuck are you doing? I try not to impugn their character anymore, and I'll say something like, well, that wasn't very nice of you, or...
It looks like you're distracted! What the fuck is the matter with you?
No, I don't say things like that anymore. I try to say something like, you're not a very good driver, and then I go on. Anyway... my mind
but you're
My mind is tested most when I'm driving.
That would be a fun podcast. We could
drive around.
We can interview each other while we're driving in LA traffic and the freaking five. Oh,
on the 405.
101.
So I'm working on this idea of generosity of thought, and it starts with having it for other people because it's easier to give stuff like that to other people. It's easier to imagine having compassion for someone else before, at least for me, before it is for myself. So, you know, if you think about saying a nice thing to someone else and then think about saying that nice thing to yourself, it's difficult. At least it is for me. So that's the thing that I'm working on. But it was just speaking to what you were talking about sometimes if you have that in yourself, it's easier to give to the world. Mm-hmm. If you know how to take care of yourself, your own compassion, your own self-love, all that, then it's easier to spread around.
Yeah, it's like, it's, you know, it's the whole forgiveness and resentment thing, carrying that around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like it. It's heavy.
The story of the two monks and the Seddon chair. Have you heard this?
The what chair?
I think it's Seddon, Seddan, Seddon chair.
Oh, I don't know.
It's one of those chairs with poles that go through.
Oh,
and
yes.
People carry, you know, they carry people on their shoulders. Somebody sits in the chair and there are four people who carry him.
Right.
And it's a story of these two monks, an old monk and a young monk, who are walking down the road. And there is a woman of great wealth and her attendants and the chair and all of her packages. And there's a big, giant puddle. And the attendants can't get her and her packages across the puddle in the chair. And she's just freaking out and yelling at them and being very unkind and mean, you know, just these are the people who are serving her and she's being very unkind to them. And the monks walk up and the old monk puts her on his back and walks her across the puddle and sets her down. And the attendants put the packages in the chair and they all go about their way. And the young monk, just can't get it. He doesn't understand why he was so kind to this surly woman. You know, just didn't seem to have a stitch of compassion in her heart. And so they're walking along, and the old monk says nothing. He just goes about his way. He just keeps going, and they're walking together. And finally, the young monk says, Why were you so kind to that woman? She was so horrible and mean, and you know, why did you carry her? And he said to the young monk, he said, I put her down hours ago, but you were still carrying her.
Oh.
And it's like, I don't know, it's a great story. Yeah. Just about how you just handle it and let it go. You just release it. And that would be a great thing for me to remember in the car on the freeway. But we don't do anybody a service by carrying all that around. Right. You know?
Hey, Quinn.
Hey. I bet Quinn's a great driver.
I'm great.
Do you get mad at people when you're driving?
Yeah, mostly in L.A.
I mean, we live here, so.
Well, like L.A., L.A.
Oh, L.A. proper.
Trying to find parking. And
it does suck down there.
Yeah. That's hard. Is that what you guys are talking about?
We're talking about like 5,000 different things because we have no topic.
The subject I liked was the one you guys were on before we started, before we did this.
Our mental health?
Or lack thereof?
Our lack of mental health?
Being in the moment or something.
That's basically what we're talking about.
You brought up a specific example. The violin.
The violin, yeah.
I like that topic.
It's kind of cool to just be in the moment and just hunker down and feel the air and hear the sounds and, you know, hear your heartbeat and feel your breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like there's a whole universe available at any given moment.
Yeah.
for that us we to forget tap about.
Yeah, because we're up here with our crazy thoughts and thinking.
Crazy, stupid human brains.
I know, right? Is that what it's like to be a dog? Oh my God.
What? Always in the
moment. Always in the
always
moment.
In the moment.
Except my dog. He's kind of got a nervous disorder, I think. He's scratching at the door right now. I'm going to go get him.
Our dog Pico is always in the moment. He just always.
I don't know why I think of Pico as being a girl, but Pico's a boy. So
oh, no. You, yeah, hey. Pico's a boy.
Where is he?
He's a big, handsome guy.
I heard him scratching.
What do you do to be in the moment, Quinn? Where do you feel like you're most centered? Like,
I find it really hard to meditate. Like, I've been trying recently, you know?
Do you want to use my app?
No, I've been trying to do unguided, you know?
Yeah.
Just, like, wake up in the morning and not, you know? But running, playing music, those are where I feel most sort of...
In the flow?
In the flow, yeah.
What do you think about when you're running?
I'll get him.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Ziggy. Here he comes.
No, I think about the things I usually think about just in a different way. Like, I don't know. It really clears my head, kind of. What about you guys?
Well, I've been meditating every day.
Oh, wow.
I have found that it might be necessary for me to do that for the rest of my life.
It's not a bad thing to do.
No, I know. But what it's helped me see, though, is that in my mind, I see it as like this river of calm that's always inside of me that I can go down to when I need to. Because my human brain is constantly in this frenetic state of thinking about 1,000 things all at once. But I can always get down to that river of calm if I need to. It's always there. And like the app that I use, he talks about the blue sky is always there no matter what. If you've ever been in an airplane, you see that above the clouds, the sky is always blue.
Right.
You come down under the clouds, it's raining, it's gray or whatever. But if you can imagine that the blue sky is always up there, it helps to calm you. And that's what it feels like to me. And I can feel it if I haven't meditated for a couple of days. Like I'm on a trip or something. So I try to at least, even for little flashes of moments, just, you know, do little exercises that I know how to do just to keep that calm.
Right.
And also, like, our family's been through several years of turmoil. and it's taken a toll on my brain. So, that's another podcast. But I'm still alone. You turn into a navigator. Please navigate me.